Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
I just sent out the Six Colors magazine for June.
The magazine, it approaches. I'll check my mail right now.
Oh, yeah, it might be there.
Nope, I'm too far down in the list.
Oh, yeah, I got it.
It probably goes alphabetically, I'm sure. That's what I always used to tell myself.
Yeah, that's it. It's not that it doesn't like you.
That's alphabetical, I understand. There needs to be order in this galaxy.
Yeah, there's a lot of funny stuff in there, or at least I guess people can judge whether they think it's funny or not.
there's a lot of stuff in there.
I was amused by some of the stuff that we did in there. I wrote about summer and how summer is funny if you do this, which I think we talked about on the Secret podcast before. But I wrote a little thing about how it's not just that it's summertime and you know my kids are home from school and all of that, but it's also the whole, you know, beta software thing, and do you install it? When do you install it? And then, you know, it's summer is often a long-term project kind of thing because you're thinking you got to review iOS or macOS or, you know, I got to update my photos book. That all has to happen over the summer. It's like summer, I have all these memories of like sitting in my backyard writing various OS 10 reviews, you know, on a summer day. And usually those were more like August, late August, early September, but, you know, the nicer weather time here.
Yeah, I remember coming home from, like, going out to play Frisbee games and then coming back because I was on deadline and had to finish writing a review.
Oh, yeah. Good times.
iOS, usually, because it took forever and I always had, like, 100 screenshots. I don't really miss that. I mean, it's nice to not have to feel like I need to write 12,000 words about iOS. The short answer is someone else will do it, and that's fine. It's nice to have a little more leniency and like, I'm going to take some time to think about this.
Yeah, it's, it's just different. It's a different feel. And it's just like, now I'm conditioned. Like, when it's summertime, you know, the days are long, the temperatures are warmer, and there's, you know, OS stories and things to do. It's just all part of it now, which is, I know, is not normal. But in my life, in fact, today, as we're recording this, it's the 9th anniversary of the iPhone
Indeed,
being released.
Yeah, that's right.
The iPhone was released, and I immediately had to go up into the mountains to we had a weekly, for a few years my family and I went to a family camp up in the mountains, the Lair of the Bear, and that's like you get on a list and then you're assigned a week, and it's like there was a waiting list, and it was months in advance of planning. And of course the iPhone came out on the Friday. And we had to go on the Saturday, and I had to write my review basically like in a tent cabin because that's just how it works. So I was flashing back to that because it's that time of year. I think Brian Chen, now tech writer for the New York Times, I believe Brian Chen basically waited in line and brought me back an iPhone. I think that I think I got that one that
days.
He I think I got the one that he bought.
Probably wouldn't do that anymore for you.
Probably not. No, he probably
he's
has
busy man.
He has his Brian Chen now
to do
those things for him, I think.
Well, I sat in a parking lot because the little 18 I opted to go to the AT&T store, and it's sort of like one of those little retail locations, and it had a parking lot behind it, and that's where they put all of us. And so we had like a little like ad hoc rope line almost set up there, and then we all sat down and waited for many hours because nobody knew when the trucks were going to arrive. I think they didn't show up until like 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And so there were easily, you know, 50 people there or something like that. And they didn't have as many phones at the AT&T store either, but I lucked out and I got one. But it was very hot, I remember. And we were all sitting there baking in the sun a little bit.
See, some memories you make them and they attach in your brain and they connect. And for Apple people, Apple related people, this is what happens.
9 years of the iPhone, though. I think that's it doesn't seem like it's been that long.
And yet, on another level, it seems like forever ago, right? I mean, life before iPhones?
Right, right, yeah. I think that's true, too. Today, actually, this is pretty funny. I was reading, I was in Marvel Unlimited, and I was reading an issue of Iron Man from 2008, and which I think is a Matt Fraction's run. And there's a bit where Tony Stark's on the run and he's going to this, like he's in Germany or something at this like kind of like tech swap meet thing. And he realizes this one of these guys has turned him in. He said, oh, there's always, you know, some nerd or geek who's going to turn me in for the next best upgrade they can get. And then the next panel is like, I bet that guy got an iPhone. Like today I was sitting there going like, I mean, in 2008, a year after the iPhone came out, that kind of made sense as a joke. In 2016, that kind of has a very different meaning because it's commoditized, right? Like, who doesn't have an iPhone to a certain extent? Yeah. Certainly somebody going to a tech swap meet is, like, you know, going to have some technology there. So I thought that was funny how fast perception has shifted.
Yeah, I can't even imagine of I had a Palm Treo, so I had a phone with data on it. But the data usage on that thing, I mean, I was using it for, I would look at email sometimes, but I mean, it was just not, it's not like it was with the iPhone. The iPhone made it so much easier to access so many different things on the internet. And to think now about, like, not having data and all that information in your pocket everywhere you go in 9 years, it's just like, I mean, I think I talked about this and written about it both, but I do really believe, like, that is a line of demarcation that we could point to 9 years ago today and say, one, that that's what the computer, personal computer revolution and the computer revolution in general, that's the moment it was leading up to. And that I would say, you know, in hindsight, that's what people are going to remember is, like, and then we finally all got interconnected supercomputers in our pockets everywhere we went. I feel like perhaps that moment and what followed it will be the one of the, you know, most important lines of demarcation in terms of, certainly in terms of technology, and maybe even in terms of sort of culture and human life in our lifetimes. I really do believe that.
I think you're right. And it's fascinating how much that's considered almost the norm. The other night I was talking with a friend of mine and he was an early adopter of, he has a plasma TV that he bought, like, probably right out of college. So, like, 2002 era. And he, you know, saying the other night, he's like, you know, I keep wanting to replace my TV, but I'm waiting for, like, the next really big jump. You know, in the same way that going from CRTs to HDTVs was a huge jump. And I was like, I don't know. Like, is that the kind of thing certainly doesn't come around even every decade, it looks like. And so sometimes when people talk about, especially in cases of Apple, like, oh, what is the next big thing? And we've talked about this a lot in the last year or so. But the point is, maybe that's not something that happens again in the lifetime of the people who are discussing this, right? Like, in the same way that, you know, maybe there isn't as big a jump from, say, CRT to HDTVs as there was, you know, 15 years ago now. And so I wonder about that a lot. Like, I was thinking today, sitting in the coffee shop, you know, just sort of musing, we used to have these conversations about, you know, oh, what's left that you can't do on your iPad that you still want to do to be able to get stuff done? And I thought, in a few years, will we be having that conversation about the Apple Watch? Oh, what can't you do on your Apple Watch that, you know, doesn't let you get work done or something? I was like, I don't think so. But at the same time, I don't know. I mean, a lot could change in 5 or 10 years and we could all be, you know, wearing glasses with displays in them or something, or earbuds that talk to us all the time instead of doing stuff. So I don't think that's necessarily likely. I think that's still kind of a science fictional thing. It takes a lot longer, and those quantum leaps are fewer and farther between, I think, than we've been trained to begin believe them, because so many smaller ones have happened over the last 20, 30 years.
You run up against biology. I mean, I think that's always one of the problems with things like Google Glass and other stuff like that, is that it's you run up against biology. And unless, I mean, I know there are people who talk about it, like, oh, well, biohacking, it's really going to be a thing and all that. But, you know, we're barely scratching the surface now in terms of, like, I think now, like, what was it last year that they did a thing where somebody who is completely paralyzed was able to move a mouse cursor with their brain after a lot of training, but it also involved implanting wires. And I mean, it's early days for that stuff. I don't doubt that if technology continues progressing as it's been progressing, that there will be things that overcome the biological issues. But, you know, right now we're getting very close to that, where it's like our computer technology can take us to this point, but you almost need biotechnology to take you further, and that's going to be a harder nut to crack. And so, you know, I never want to say, you know, this is it, because it's never it. Nothing ever ends. There's always going to be something more amazing coming down the pike. But it is hard to see how, like you said, that quantum leap happens soon, anyway. And it goes back to those arguments about, like, don't expect another iPhone soon, because it's not out there.
It's a matter of scale too, right? We've all been trained to expect this sort of exponential growth, because, you know, you look at stuff like Moore's Law and the growth and increasing speeds in processors and density of microchips, and also just increases in storage, all this stuff, right? Like, over the last 30, 40 years, there really has been exponential growth in a lot of those things. But you sometimes wonder, like, if you zoom out to like a, you know, century level or a, a millennia level or whatever, like, is this overall an exponential curve that we're on, or is it more of like a more gradual curve and we're just in like a steep part of it, or we're going to peak or what? I mean, I don't know. It's exactly the same thing you're saying with the iPhone, right? It's one thing to look at the peak of that, but like if you zoomed out to a 20-year level, right, how would that look? Would we be at a plateau now, or would we still be going up but just less sharply? It's really hard to tell the shape of the thing when you're inside of it.
Yeah. I mean, you can't, right? I mean, all of us lack that perspective to a certain degree. And that's just, you try to get step outside yourself, but it's very hard to do. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like this is when I would hear, not even my parents, my parents talked about it a little bit, about like the early days of TV. And grandparents, certainly, this idea that in the deep past, this thing that is pervasive just didn't exist. And for my generation, you know, probably our generation, television was a good example of that, of like, what do you mean television didn't exist, right? Mm-hmm. How could that even be? And it's very clear, like, you know, the internet and smartphones and things like that, it's just like it's something that's inconceivable and yet really didn't begin to exist in a form resembling today. I would put that point, yes, there were precursors, but I would put that point 9 years ago. And the other thing about it is just when I talk about I think about the AI stuff, and we've talked about that, like, you know, Siri and the Google Now stuff and Alexa, you know, Amazon Echo. I do wonder if that is the equivalent of the precursors to the smartphone. Cause if I'm right that the computer industry leading up to the smartphone was, you know, in hindsight is going to be just that, it's going to be seen as a precursor to the real thing, which is that smartphone. When I say there's not going to be another iPhone, the question is always like, well, is there a precursor to something out there that we can see that looks like it's really early and clumsy and dumb and big and, you know, all these things that happen with the computer industry, but that you can see it's going in a direction. And maybe the AI stuff is that, where it's like it's really bad now, even though it does amazing things, it's bad, it's clearly still bad, and in hindsight it will be laughably bad. But maybe that's one of those examples of, yes, this in, and not 5 years, this in 15 years,
yeah,
might be like talking to another human being who knows everything that there is to know.
I'm inclined to put it on a much farther scale than that, just based on, you know, it does get better and it's not necessarily just like a linear curve going straight up, but maybe there are moments of exponential growth. But I still feel like there's something intrinsic left to crack there that we haven't figured out yet. And I think it may be even further out than that, or at least for a very long time, we're going to be dealing with AI that is a lot more simplistic and it lacks the true sort of intelligence aspect of it. I think you're going to have these intelligent agents, you know, like Alexa and Siri for a lot longer than they're like before we get actual intelligence of some kind. But yeah, I think you're right that could be another major leap. But yeah, 15 years seems like relatively soon to me, honestly. So but VR is another thing I think about sometimes. I'm never sure whether or not there's something that's going to pan out. You know, and we've talked about it a bunch, I think, because it is something that seems to be gathering steam, no pun intended, right now. But I don't know. I mean, there's been a lot of false starts. You look at all the various things that we see every year in technology, and there's a lot of false starts, right? I mean, how many times have we heard that this would be the year that, I don't know, Linux will break into the mainstream?
What's going on there?
There's a thunderstorm happening.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That beats my washer and dryer.
If it if I suddenly cut out, you'll know why.
Yeah. I guess so. That's
summertime. Summertime is about thunderstorms here in New England.
Let's see. So Six Colors Magazine. Hey. I reviewed things from Scotland. Things brought to me from Scotland. You lived in Scotland for a while.
I did many, many years ago. James Thompson and I concluded that we were at least in Scotland at the same time, although in different cities.
Well, he's lived most of his life in Scotland.
Right, right. But I think the period where I was there was very close to the time that he had been in Ireland doing some work over there. So now we concluded that we at least overlapped in Scotland, and I certainly went to Glasgow. So, you know, maybe we passed each other on a street corner.
I bet you did. Maybe you guys were just, you exchanged glances over something involving coconut. What is it with coconut and Scotland? That's the part. So James Thompson, who developed Dragfang and does pCalc, he and his wife Saskia came to WWDC last month, and they stayed with us for a couple of days before the conference started. And one of the things that that James wanted to do was bring particularly Scottish treats with him. And so after the week, I ended up with this plate with all of these Scottish things on them. And I was staring at them, and I decided at one point as I walked past them in the living room, I thought, you know, I should try them all and write something about that. It would be really stupid, but it would be fun. And so that's what I did. It's in the Six Colors magazine. I analyzed Scottish sweets with pictures. Shocking number of them involve coconut, which I can only theorize is that
indigenous to Scotland.
Scotland is so far away from the equator and the tropics that when they discovered that coconut was a thing that existed, they became obsessed with it. Sort of like, this doesn't actually follow, but like how Sweden is full of people who love tacos, like Sweden loves tacos. Like tacos are not native. The taco does not grow naturally in northern climates. The Swedes love tacos. They really do.
I like the idea that I like continue on from that idea that like 100 years ago they discovered coconuts and they just sort of cornered the market on them and like shipped them all into the Scotland, and then, you know, everyone's like, yeah, they're all right, and so now they're working off their coconut backlog. What can we put these in? I don't know, put them in candy, just keep their own stuff in there.
Yeah, we got a backlog of it, just so it's like 100-year-old coconut that they're still trying to get rid of.
It's all dried, you know, it's fine, it lasts, I'm sure. I don't know, I don't really like coconut.
Anyway, so some of them I liked. I liked the milk chocolate mallow, which at first I thought was going to be like a ding dong, but it's actually like this little cookie, little oatmeal cookie, Scotland, with some marshmallow on top, and then it's just covered in chocolate. And it's actually because it's like fluffy marshmallow, it's not like super heavy or anything. I don't know if you had one of those, but those are actually pretty good. And the rest of them are all various versions of weird. The coconut covered marshmallow snowball, an actual thing. Yeah. That I just thought, dip this in some dark chocolate and then you got something, because it was almost like eating a Mounds or an Almond Joy, but without many key components.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because the other night while I was after a Frisbee game, a teammate of mine said her little brother had just come back from an exchange trip to Russia, and she brought us all these little Russian chocolates, which were basically like chocolate with like marshmallowy type filling in them, which were actually pretty good, I thought, and they reminded me of one of the things I had that James brought.
The caramel log.
No,
it didn't work for me. Did not work for me.
It's bad marketing there.
And then I had the original Lee's macaroon, which is seriously okay. So on the outside, toasted coconut and a very thin layer of something sort of chocolate like, but inside it's fondant and it's just pure white sugar. Basically, on the inside, there's no flavor to it. There's not, and I kept thinking, like, well, what's going to be on the inside? Is it a cookie? Is it a no? It's just like a brick, a log of sugar. And so, if you love like eating sugar, like, and I'm not saying sugary sweets, I'm saying literally, if you love eating sugar, like, hey, here's some white sugar, I'm going to put it on a spoon and just suck it in, then the original Lee's macaroon is for you.
Wow,
It was wild.
I ended up with a couple of curly whirlies, which I think probably are more English than Scottish.
That was your by request, right?
I did not request them. Those were requested by Erica.
Oh, Erica Ensign, right.
And I ended up with the leftovers, essentially. I think I made a crack about, what do I get? And I ended up with a few of those, which are sort of like a thin chocolate with caramel inside them.
It's a pity. You got a pity curly whirly.
I did. That curly whirly sounds like something they do you back in school.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't bad. It's got it's very thin, like milk chocolate with like just caramel inside of it. And so it like it's very bendable. So I don't I'm not sure I get the entire appeal, but chocolate and caramel, I guess you can't go too wrong with that.
Yeah, my buy request was the Crunchy Bar. Mm. And it's, I only know about it, and it's not sold in the U.S. I mean, you can find it, but it's not made for the U.S. market. I only know about it because, so Carrie Hicks, who's Rich Siegel's wife, who does BB Edit, we were all on a cruise, one of these Mac cruises, and it was to Bermuda. And we get to Bermuda, and we're there, and she's like, oh, I got to go find Crunchy Bars. You go, well, what are those? And she says, oh my God, they're so great. They're English candy bars. And Bermuda is part of, it's like an English possession. So it's sort of half English, half American, because it's very close to the United States. But it's run by England. So it's sort of in between. It's funny. Funny mixture of the two. But sure enough, in a store, I find Crunchy Bars. And so I buy like a bag of Crunchy Bars and I bring them back. And I tried one and I was like, oh my God, it actually is really great. And so now whenever I'm in the UK or often it's in an airport in the UK, I will find a Crunchy Bar and I will buy it. Because I'm not a candy bar eater. I don't like go around buying candy bars. It's not thing. Sure. It's not a thing I do. But that's a fun treat. And when I was a kid and I would have a candy bar, which again, wasn't that often, but I would choose a Butterfinger. And part of that is because I like peanut butter flavor. But part of it was that it's got that weird kind of flaky, crunchy, center. And, the Crunchy Bar is kind of like that. It's chocolate covered on the outside and it's got like a toffee on the inside, but it's in this weird honeycomb thing and it's crunchy. It's really great. So James brought some of those, and my family devoured many of them, but I managed to get a couple of them in and remind them I like them. So thank you, James.
When I lived in Scotland, my addiction was chocolate digestive biscuits.
Oh, those are the best.
I really loved it. I used to buy those by the package from the Tesco's around the corner for me, and that was my addiction. And I found that there are some places that carry them around here. So every once in a while, I do buy myself a package just to get that nostalgia fix. Although I will say the brand that they have mostly is McVitie's is the most common brand. Although I really liked actually the Tesco, just like their generic store brand of them was actually pretty good. So I still have a fond memories of those.
I love them too. I discovered them when we were there in 2000. Turns out, and this is one of those things about like the joy of discovery versus having everything in the world available by a couple of clicks. It's the I wrote about this at one point where it was something like you used to have to go around and go to different record stores to find that one record that you hadn't found anywhere, and now you just go online and you get it. And I think I wrote about beer, like, but if there's a beer you really like and it's not in the store, it's actually really hard to get that because that's a much more complicated thing for a lot of reasons. So it turns out that my discovery of McVitie's digestives in the UK, Beverages & More has them, and Cost Plus has them. So there are more than one location within 5 miles of my house where I can buy digestives of all the kinds. So and I don't, because one, I don't need to be eating cookies all the time. But also, yeah, I mean, it's sort of like the novelty. What's really funny about digestives, boy, we are way off track, but hey, it's secret.
Welcome to
secret
the podcast.
Is for the party that we had WWDC week, Lauren sent me to the store to Whole Foods and she said, cheese and crackers. That's what you have to do. Get cheese and crackers. That was my mission. And I was looking in the cracker aisle, and I'm never in the cracker aisle, but I was looking and I bought some, you know, I bought some of these crackers. And I'm like, oh, everybody always buys these crackers, but they're terrible. So I'm not going to buy those crackers. And then there are these, I think they're Cars, but they're wheat crackers. They're whole wheat crackers.
Oh yeah. Sure.
And I always remember liking them as a kid when there would be like a cracker plate out, cheese and crackers. Those were the ones that I would devour. And I tasted one, you know, when we opened them up for the party, and I was like, yeah, I'm right. Those are digestives. They are
the same thing. I know exactly what you're talking about.
They're not called digestives. They're called wheat crackers, but they are they are the same. They are exactly the same.
You'll get them in the I'll get them in the assortment of those of those for sometimes.
Yeah. So they really do exist in America, and yet are not.
It's not a thing. No one puts them in chocolate.
Well, it's cuz they're too nobody puts them in chocolate, and cuz they're sweet instead of savory, and so many of our crackers, we like savory crackers and not sweet crackers.
Wheat could start a company bringing digestive biscuits to America.
It's too late.
Just buy those and dip them in chocolate.
It's too late, though, because they, like I said, they've already got McVitie's and Hobnobs and stuff.
Yeah, but you can undercut them because they're all like imported. All
right. Oh, that's right. This is going to be like, hey, it's almost 4th of July. This is the USA lightly sweet wheat cookie. USA. Yeah,
We'll come up with a totally new name.
Well, we'll base it on around Alexander Hamilton because he's really popular now. So it'll be like the Alexander Hamilton Cookie Company. I'm just workshopping here.
Yeah, that's cool. Bounce some ideas off.
And it'll be like it'll be like Treasury. It'll be like the Treasury of flavor.
Yeah, that's a winner right there. The Treasury of I noticed you have some Treasury cookies there.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are pretty good. Cookies.
The Treasuries are the best. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so spoiler alert for the Six Colors magazine that you probably already got in your email. Anyway, it was fun to write that. What the heck? It was fun to write that. You had another silly back page column.
I did. The war on ports.
War on ports.
Formerly the war on buttons. We get rid of all the buttons and all the ports. I don't know what we have at that point. Is it literally a brick?
Can I tell my joke?
Tell your joke.
Everybody's already heard it, but I'm going to tell it anyway, which is, why did Steve Jobs only wear turtlenecks?
I don't know, Jason. Why?
Because he hated buttons. The war on buttons.
Because he hated ports. Wait, what?
Huh?
No, it's super confusing. I think I do believe that the ultimate evolved form of an Apple gadget is one that has, you know, no buttons and no ports. And the Apple Watch is part of the way there, right? Because it has no ports on it. It does have two buttons on it. Now, both of those will now do useful things.
They're awfully convenient.
I was thinking about that too, because I have gotten frustrated with the lack of buttons on some of our, like, we had this wave for a while, right, where everybody's like, touchscreens are the thing, let's make everything a touchscreen, that'll fix all of our problems, in kind of the same way that they're just like, the iMac was blue, that was a success, let's make everything blue, right? You know, so, you know, I have a touchscreen in my car, which is terrible. You know, there's a lot of places where touchscreens don't really make sense. I believe there was even a time, you know, like I hear a lot of parents telling stories about their kids, you know, they have very young kids, and when they are able to walk and, like, you know, at some point they go up and start like trying to use like the touchscreen on the TV. I'm sure that gave somebody the bright idea, like, what if they made a touchscreen TV? And you're like, that does not solve any problems. And in fact, just creates a lot of other problems. So I do think that we'll eventually see an iPhone that will probably not have, I'm going to guess we're going to see an iPhone eventually that will have zero ports on it, right? Everything will be done wirelessly. It'll charge via induction. Ooh. Why? I mean, there's really no, at a certain point, everything can be done wirelessly.
I don't know. I feel like you always want to have something, one thing that you can use to bail yourself out of situations like that. Unless there's like universal inductive charging or something like that. I don't know. I mean, you could argue like the Apple Watch is a good example of that, where it just, you know, the way you charge the watch is the one way, and there's no other way. There's no alternate plug that you can do. You're going somewhere, bring your charger with you. That's what you have
to do. You'll have one of those external batteries that'll just have an inductive charging plate on it, right? And you'll like magnet them together, and there you go. You're done. At a certain point, I think at a certain point, that's the way it's going. And you know, they'll probably start removing. I had this moment yesterday where I was like, I wonder if they could remove the, like, everyone's talking about them putting in like a touch sensitive home button. I wonder if they could just get away with the sleep wake button like going away. And I was like, yeah, that's still too easy. Like, it's still useful for turning your phone like on and off.
I think the Apple Watch shows the way there, which is, it's not bad to have one, something you can operate by feel, mm-hmm. and two, something that gives you that level of tactileness. But no buttons, you know, I would say it's like no buttons can be bad if it's literally there's nothing there. But what you don't want is extra buttons. Like, if that makes any sense, buttons that aren't essential, that you suddenly have an array and you have to keep track of them and which button is where. I'd actually say that's one of the problems with the Siri remote is, as happy that they are that they put a trackpad on it, the fact is there's this, there's six buttons that you have to move around and you lose track of which one. I always am like, is my thumb on the play pause button here or did I move it? And am I going to wreck everything when I press the button because I want to pause the movie? So I think Apple seeks no extra buttons, no buttons more than are really required for standard operation.
No, I agree with that completely. I think if it makes sense, I mean, the ultimate form of that was probably that the iPod Shuffle, third generation iPod Shuffle, which was a terrible product. and so I think, I think it's a trend with Apple and certainly reducing everything to the point where there really aren't that many. I mean, you look at the buttons that currently exist on an iPhone and almost all of them have like a dedicated task, right? The one exception probably being the home button, which does slightly different things, though more or less kind of does a lot of similar things. And kind of the volume button, since you can use them to take pictures in the camera, even though anybody who remembers way back to the early days of the iPhone, that was kind of a contentious issue at some points. So I think, certainly creating something where every button has its purpose and it's there. They've sort of willed it down, right? It's almost like the least common denominator of buttons. But I feel like on the port side, if they're going to get rid of the headphone port, I think the Lightning port will stick around for a while. But in the long run, I think that mostly ends up being about charging. And if they feel like they can do inductive charging, they just might do that.
Yeah. It's as my rant earlier this week about the headphone jack relates, it's the what's the benefit, right? I mean, like the watch is a good example where, I don't have extra Apple Watch chargers, nor am I inclined to buy them. So when I go somewhere, I unplug everything and I bring it with me, and then I just carry it around with me. And that's the question with inductive stuff for an iPhone is everybody going to buy an inductive charger or two or three and have them around? And if they're out somewhere and their phone's running down, does somebody else have one? Or is that not a thing that anybody has and you're just out of luck? Those are all the trade-offs there.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm still on the fence with the whole headphone jack thing because of some of those reasons. I don't know. I worry that Apple's desire to eliminate all of those unsightly ports and buttons might lead it down the garden path, but I guess we'll find out.
Yeah. Well, I think we've done enough discussion of candy for one episode.
I want candy.
Yeah. But we'll be back next week. Check out your inbox for the Six Colors magazine and let us know what you think of that. And we're always looking for more suggestions for things to write in future issues of the magazine and to talk about here on the Secret Podcast. And thank you for supporting us at Six Colors. Dan, have a good 4th of July weekend. You going to do anything special?
I really don't have anything on my agenda right now. I guess I'll have to find something to do. Maybe I'll just have a cookout by myself. How about you?
Going away with to my wife's sister's place in the up in the foothills for the long weekend, which will be nice and hot, but that's good. Should be hot for the 4th of July.
That seems appropriate.
It's only the right way. Well, don't get struck by lightning.
It's now sunny and raining.
Okay, good luck.
Thanks.
Goodbye.
Bye.